and welcome to Talking Tourism, the podcast series especially for tourism operators and industry professionals. I'm Tracy Mallett, and I'll be your host for today's episode. Talking Tourism is an initiative of Tourism Industry Council Tasmania. TICT is the peak industry body for the tourism industry in the beautiful state of Tasmania. If you are a regular listener to Talking Tourism, welcome back. If you're a first-time listener and enjoyed today's episode, remember there are now more than 130 episodes of Talking Tourism Conversations available from wherever you access your podcasts, or you can simply stream them on the TICT website at tict.com.au. We're recording this podcast today on the lands of the Palawa and Pakana, and TICT offers its respects to the Tasmanian Aboriginal people, their elders past and present, for their enduring care and management of these islands. Today's episode is brought to you by our partner, Tasmanian Parks and Wildlife Service. Parks and Wildlife presents, protects and manages Tasmania's extraordinary landscapes in partnership with the community. They work to conserve the state's natural and cultural heritage while providing for sustainable use and economic opportunities for the Tasmanian community. Thanks to Tasmanian Parks and Wildlife for their generous support of TICT and for helping to make this episode of Talking Tourism possible. Now, let's get into today's conversation with Hayley Brown, founder of Vacayit. Recognised as one of Australia's nine most influential female entrepreneurs, Hayley Brown has become a catalyst for change within the tourism industry. Upon recognising that blind and low-vision tourists were precluded from travelling as tourism marketing is visual, she created the world's first sensory audio tourism app. She is highly experienced in the field of accessible tourism, universal design, inclusion and diversity, and aims to drive positive societal change around how destinations and operators market their experiences. Welcome, Hayley, to Talking Tourism.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Now, I believe this is not your first time to Tasmania and that you've spent quite some time here.
Love Tasmania. I'll talk to anyone about it.
Well, conveniently you've done that for your very product, which we will get to shortly. I'm very excited today to obviously chat to Hayley around accessible tourism and how we can improve the experience for people with all sorts of disabilities. Hayley is aware that this topic is very close to my heart, given that my husband is blind. We travel a lot and sometimes find it challenging to visit offerings that will deliver a meaningful experience for both of us. So, Hayley, how do we help tourism operators understand how they can make their offering more accessible?
Yeah, I think it's just about looking about how you can start first. One of the biggest things that I talk about is around the difference between infrastructure and an experience. The typical tourism experience that we talk about is every single touch point of your visitor journey. So how do you feel when you're booking? How do you feel when you're there? And how do you feel when you're at home? And what are you going to tell your friends and family to get them in the door? And the disability experience, we often leave it to, are they going to get in the door? How do they get in the door? And completely dehumanise 20% of the population in the process. And so what we do is help people actually focus on the experience rather than just the infrastructure, because the infrastructure is a big part of the experience, but it's not just the experience, and it's about making it sensory and immersive. So it's about starting with web accessibility, or putting the accessibility information on your website first, while all the way leading up to infrastructure as a late, you know, 2-year, 5-year, 10-year plan, depending on how big the development is, and everything in between, like disability awareness training. You can do an audio guide with us, sensory guides, and different training programs that you can implement in your organisation.
So before we get too far down looking at all sorts of accessibility improvements, tell us a little bit about your product.
Yeah, so we started because tourism marketing is predominantly visual. And for somebody who is blind and low vision, that can make it really hard to make informed decisions before they go, but also have immersive on-site experiences when there. So we create immersive and sensory audio guides with destination marketing organisations, tourism operators, hotels and events.
So tourism operators are potentially starting to embrace this technology, and I know you've got a lot of operators on your platform already. What differences or changes to approach might tourism operators need to consider for greater inclusion and diversity?
I think we need to just start considering them in our process is a really basic start to all of it. I know it sounds kind of funny to say, but it's when you're designing a product, are you thinking about every single customer? We've got 1 in 4 to 1 in 5 in Australia with a disability from a range of different needs, from hearing loss, vision loss, short statured, wheelchair users, deaf or hard of hearing. Oh, I think I said that one. But a wide range of disabilities that we need to cater for. So I think it's about just targeting one to start off with, looking at what you can create today for that one user and then start building upon that.
So that requires consultation.
Sure.
And how do we go about that? How do operators go about that?
I think Tourism Australia's website, and I know a couple of different state governments have resources on their website and different guidelines and checklists that you can follow. There are also some accessibility consultants. So we've got, you know, Get Aboutable, which does more tourism experience consulting, while then you've got, you know, access consultants like Get Skilled Access or Morris Godding Consults, various other consultants that you can go to and get access to information from. But if you just want to start today, I would say just put your information on your website.
And obviously reach out to some of the service providers.
Oh, and to the peak bodies as well. Yep, service providers and peak bodies like Vision Australia, Blind Deaf Australia.
Visibility in Tasmania.
Visibility in Tasmania. Autism Australia.
Expressions Australia.
Expressions Australia. Yeah.
I think that's really important. I think it is about talking to the customer and hearing it firsthand from them. One of the stats that we often, hear or see misrepresented is around wheelchair users and that they are the ones that we're trying to accommodate, whereas in Tasmania that's only 4% of people with a disability. So that's an awful lot of other considerations that we need to take into account. So what might you say to businesses who are wary of making changes around accessibility because of the perceived cost?
You know, obviously infrastructure does have a large cost to it. I think there are cheap solutions. I was just in the UK and every single cafe had like a £15 metal pull-out thing that they store behind their reservation desk that gets people on the stair over the two stairs that come in the door. So you can go and kind of get cheap solutions in the meantime, as well as historic, what are they called, the historic buildings?
Heritage
listed buildings. You can put a lot of technology inside of it. You just can't change the infrastructure of it. So there's wheelchair lifts that you can go, but again, it's expensive and it kind of seems scary to start. So for me, I would probably say look at what infrastructure you need, get your audit done, or just look if it's, you know, common sense, you don't have a lift to the second floor. Think about what you need to do to be able to build that and how many years do you think that's actually going to be achievable in. Put a little bucket that you put a little bit of money in whenever you get something, and over the span of 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, then you'll be ready to have it and then you'll be ready to start the infrastructure. But in the meantime, start thinking about the other experiences that you can be doing, that you can do today, that you can do tomorrow, that you can do with your staff, whether it's just training to make people feel more welcome or have that information, then that changes the experience already. And you'll get more people with disabilities in your door as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Quick tip for the business operators there. There's often grants available for some of those infrastructure improvements.
Absolutely. And you can get like 50% off, you know, half of it subsidised as well. That can help you start and it seems a little less scary.
What are some of the tips for tourism operators to consider in their engagement of people with varying ability?
Yeah, I think number one thing that you can do is just ask. People with disabilities know what they need best. I think we've been speaking on behalf of them for a little bit too long, forever, I think that stands as. And so if there's somebody with a disability that comes in, just ask what would make their experience better. When it comes to hiring, ask how you can make the hiring experience easier. I think all of us very typically will assume what people can and can't do. And as my dad says, you know, it happens when you assume. You make an ass out of you and me. So, oh God, that's ingrained in my head. Yeah, it's just about, you know, making sure that you're consulting people with disabilities in your design process. And when they're there, just ask them what they need. They know themselves best.
I couldn't agree more. And obviously, as the spouse of somebody with a disability, the number of times that I get asked what Greg might want is so unfair on him.
And that's it. You need to speak to the person with a disability and ask them. Instead of saying, what does this person want to drink? What does this person want to eat?
Yep. One of the most frustrating aspects.
They're humans, I think. Keep a human perspective on it.
And I think in Tasmania, because we are so collaborative and we do work best when we're talking to each other, then clearly that just has to expand to all people.
Absolutely. And you know what, even just talking about Tasmania and collaboration, I think Tasmania and the smaller states in general are better at collaborating. And it would be, what would be really cool is actually looking at the industry come together collectively to be able to improve initiatives. There's a lot of things that you can do collectively with 10 people that actually reduces the cost, or 10 organizations that reduces the cost overall. Tasmania is great for it, is great for collaborating. There, I know that tourism operators here are not comfortable that people are going to be here all year round, unlike some other states who just always know that there's always going to be people there. And so the way that Tasmania approaches innovation is really unique, because they go, well, we don't have the funding to do all of this. How do we do this collectively? And I think that's a really good approach. And I think it also could be done really well with accessibility, whether it's, you know, if 10 people do this, can we reduce the cost of this? And majority of operators will say yes to that, especially if they're in the accessibility space, because we're just trying to make the world more accessible.
And that's probably a great opportunity for the use of technology to improve the experience for people of all abilities as well, is sharing costs.
Absolutely. Yeah, technology reduces the cost of a lot of things. Unfortunately, there's not enough innovation in the disability space, but it is booming. It's on the rise. We don't have much in the tourism space, but we're seeing it across every other industry. Disability tech is starting to boom, and I think it's about to happen in tourism industry. So keep an eye out. I'm sure there's more. I try to tell everyone it's a great opportunity. And because especially the disability market, the reason why it's so good to innovate in this sector is because when you design with people with disability first, you create a product for everyone. And that's what's super cool. Like the potato peeler was I can't believe I'm talking about this, was designed for people with limited mobility, but it ended up just being so useful that every single person use it. An iPhone was designed first with people with disability, and it's the first universally designed and accessible product in the world entirely. And so the success of those products, you know, we've all got a potato peeler, I hate to say it, is, and, you know, in even our platform, majority of our users don't have a disability because they just like audio. So, yeah, it's looking at them as bigger than just for people with disabilities. Look at how it can benefit everyone.
I know we've talked a lot about audio experiences, and clearly that is your platform, but yeah. In my experience, having a tactile experience is also really good, particularly for people blind and low vision. In Tasmania, I noticed not a lot of experiences enable or allow a tactile experience or component of that. How can we, whereas I do see that in other states, Queensland does it particularly well. Yeah, how can we work with some operators to encourage them or to help them see the benefits of a tactile experience for particularly the blind and low vision?
Operators don't need to just enable, you know, tactile experiences to absolutely everyone. But I think you can create, like if it's a museum and there's sculptures, if you've got maybe 5 people in a month coming in who are blind, usually it's okay, should be okay, but you need to set up a program and also the paperwork to enable that kind of thing. If it's more for just general experiences, there's different ways that you can make your experience. If it's something that can't be touched, like in, I think it's Queensland, you can touch animals, but in other states you can't in wildlife parks or in zoos, which obviously makes Queensland more attractive for the zoo space, but you know, at the end of the day, it's animal cruelty. So I don't know. It's, you know, every single wildlife park takes care of their animals very, very well, and they do in the way that's best for them. So it's about looking at how you can tell the stories differently and get people engaged without that. So if it's a museum, how can you tell the history in a better way than just like 100 words on a against the wall? Tell the history, tell the stories. People want to know about the artist. People want to know about the place. And even if it's just 5 things that are, you know, 5 minutes long each, 5 pieces of work. If it's a zoo, how do you keep it immersive, and how do you, you know, put, you can put like little sculptures of what it could feel like, or stories on histories. And that's what Tassie does awesome, is they tell stories. And we've got people and products that have so much cultural richness to it. And even with Port Arthur being here, the history behind it and the historic villages, it's, and the buildings are older. So, oh, I can talk about this for ages. Yeah, there's a lot of things that you can do that are not just tactile. There's a way that you can make it almost tactile in a sensory and experiential way.
Absolutely. One that springs to mind, and I know we're swinging back to technology, but augmented reality.
Mm.
And that's, we've certainly seen that applied to some of the historic or heritage stories in this region and beyond. And I think that's a wonderful way to obviously not have to invest in infrastructure upgrades, still tell the story and paint a picture for those that can't see of the story or the place or what happened.
Yeah, and I've got a friend actually who's doing Wei bands for like tennis matches that vibrate on your wrist while the tennis match is going. So it's a sensory experience. So, you know, thinking about different ways that you can make experiences more immersive is so cool, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And again, it gets back to the investment in that is often a lot less than an infrastructure investment.
So, absolutely.
You know, to your short-term, medium-term and long-term goals to make your experience more accessible, these are some of the ones that our operators can get involved in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, this might be slightly contentious, but when do you think we might see some standardisation on the definition of an accessible room or even an accessible experience?
Oh, goodness. I know Kerry Williams from Accessible Accommodation is fighting like anyone to get that locked down for the accessible accommodation. What she's doing has been absolutely incredible across creating a great standard. I could not tell you how long that's going to be. I guess when the industry accepts it and sees it as a good opportunity and sees it for what it is. Accessible experience, I think we're very much on track. Our team and Lisa, who's our head of content, and also just the rest of our team have been serious advocates for actually changing the perception around what an experience is. And it's not about just getting in the door. It's about having and feeling included, having a great experience and feeling included at that place. So I'm hoping within Australia, we're going to be seeing in the next couple of years experiences seen differently. And we've done a lot of work with the states on that and the operators globally. Yeah, I think we can set a standard at a global policy kind of suggestion level. I'm sure the UNWTO, talking to them a little bit around creating, actually changing the perception of just past infrastructure. But again, you have to do that stuff first. It gets people listening. So I think maybe five years on kind of a global level around accessible experiences, at least from a destination marketing organisation. Maybe 15 years for the entire population, maybe 30, we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is about education. In the meantime, it can be about education, can't it?
We need more
having
advocates.
These conversations, finding our advocates, liaising with the communities and telling the stories.
That's it. That's it. And just listening to people helps a lot. But, yeah, we need more advocates in the space. There's very few of us. If you want to innovate, it's a good place to be in, and we need a lot more loud, honest, realistic voices.
All over the country, dare I say. So as part of the marketing and the storytelling to all of our community, to include people of all abilities, how do we get some of our smaller operators to actually market the fact that they might have an accessible component or an accessible experience, and how do we work with them to market that?
Yeah, so what we do at Vacate is we give people a QR code that they can just have at their venue so that when people are there, it just gives them the option, and that same QR code and the audio guide can get put on their website through a media player. Most media players, weirdly enough, are actually not accessible. So we've developed one that's accessible and it's SEO searchable, which means that the whole experience has been transcribed, and it means that more people are going to be driven to your website because all of the audio has been transcribed in there. So that's a way that we've found has worked really well, and we can put any type of media on there. It doesn't need to be an audio guide. So even if it's just about putting the same content in audio format on your website, if you've got other experiences, it's just about listing that out on your website. If you've got, you know, your Tourism Tasmania, Visit Northern Tasmania and all the different RTOs, they're probably listing your organisation anyway. So when people are researching, they're going to look through there. So they'll go through the RTO or the STO and then go, or the local organisation, and then go through to the tourism operators. So if you can find all of that accessibility information on your webpage, then it makes that experience much more accessible. It's something like 6% of organisations or 8% of organisations globally have their accessibility information on their website. And in Australia, we've got about 60 to 70% of organisations that have at least, I think it's about 70, that have at least one accessibility requirement already built into their company. So that the perception of what is accessible and what we're saying is accessible, it's completely different. So we just need to be putting all that accessibility information on our website, both what is available but also what is not available. So, you know, if you don't have a ramp to the second floor, say that. That's going to give you a five-star experience instead of a one-star experience because of the rude shock that you said that your venue is accessible and it's not. So don't be scared to tell people the truth about the accessibility of your venue. It actually creates a better experience.
So that comes back to collaboration, doesn't it? Something that we do very well here in Tasmania is sharing those experiences and using joint messaging to market that.
Absolutely.
We've talked today about a lot of great ideas for how we can make Tasmanian tourism experiences more accessible. But Hayley, why? Why should we do it?
Look, there's obviously the social aspect that comes into it and we should do it, but the disability market is quite big. You've got 1 in 4 to 1 in 5 in Australia, which is about 20 to 24% of our population that has a disability that's physical or non-physical. Currently, they're spending about $10.8 billion of the national tourism revenue, which equates to about 10 to 15%. And I think we're targeting about 2 to 4% actually. So I think we've got, you know, 16% of people who are missing. They stay longer, they stay 2.8 times longer, they book 2.4 times more hotel rooms, they typically have luxury accommodation, they stay 22 nights instead of 12 nights. So if you want a high yield and a high value traveler, it's your disability market. It's a really good opportunity for your business. And the reason maybe they're not there at the moment is because you're not actually displaying the accessibility information on your website. People go to places that are on our app because they know we vetoed them as accessible providers, right? But outside of that, unless it's on your website, people are unlikely going to come. So you really need to make sure that information's there and that you've got a plan for the future because, you know, even when you start, can I give a quick example? So we were working with this hotel in Grampians and, you know, they had no accessibility accommodation over a span of 2 years. We've got an email from them every couple months. And they started off with saying, oh, we put the accessibility information on our website. 3 months later, oh, we've got a sensory room. And they just, you know, pinned up some soundproof stuff. And it was awesome because it's great, but they're in the middle of nowhere. So it's quite a sensory experience anyway. So they just made it even better. And then they, you know, did an audio guide with us. And then they did a sensory guide, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months, you know. And then lastly, they did a ramp around the lake. And they said the reason they ended up doing the ramp around the lake was because over time, they just kept on seeing more people come with disabilities. And so over the span of 2 years, they went from, you know, having no one with a disability to people with a disability because they were just providing more options. So that's, in my eyes, the best way to get people in the door is to start your journey because the more people see it, the more people are going to come. And then you're going to see the value out of spending more money on it.
Thanks, Hayley. Great example, and it's been great to chat today. I would encourage anyone listening to find out how Vacayet can help make their tourism experience better for vision or sensory impaired travellers. But before we let you go, Hayley, it wouldn't be an episode of Talking Tourism without what we call the Big Seven Questions. Now, everyone's going to judge you on this more than anything else.
I know.
So are you ready?
Yep.
Your favourite spot in Tasmania and why?
Cape Raoul. It's one of the three walks on the Capes. I don't know who the listener base is here. And that's all-time my favourite experience because every single time you go in and out of the, you know, big trees or scrubs, there's a different view and, like, you know, huge drop and you can feel it and it's, you know, windy here and then it's sheltered here. Oh, so cool. So that's my favourite.
Amazing part of Tassie for sure. Your favourite travel destination anywhere in the world?
Peru. Actually, I reckon Tassie would be a close second. Nice. I never say this on to every state, but I swear Tassie is my second. Peru would be my number one.
Now, if someone's coming to Tasmania for the very first time in their lives and they ask you what's the one thing they absolutely must experience while they're here, what do you tell them?
Okay, so on the Tasman Peninsula, they've got these awesome, like, sausage rolls at the Pear Farm on the Tasman Peninsula. There's these these vegetarian quiche kind of pies. Oh, so good. That's what I was.
I love that you went straight to food too. I know. Because Tasmania is very well known for this. So great answer. Now, if you were walking the overland track for 5 days, which is clearly something I can see you doing,
yep,
with three other people, and you can choose anyone in the world, famous, not so famous, living or dead, who would you choose and why?
Okay, so the first person would be, actually, I've never said her name out loud, but Harbin Gurma. She's the She's an American disability rights advocate and the first deaf-blind graduate of Harvard Law School. She's super cool. I would really love to meet her. Jonathan Yong Kim, he is by 35. He was a US Navy lieutenant commander, a former SEAL physician and NASA astronaut. Just kept on changing careers, and I think he's lived, my goal in life is 15 lives by the time I die. What one person says in their entire life, I want to do 15 times, and I think he is the epitome of that. And Michelle Obama, because I just love her.
Fabulous. What an experience that 5 days will be.
Yeah.
Now, if you're road tripping around Tasmania, what are you listening to in the car?
You know what? I had Pump It by Black Eyed Peas for, like, I went out of service and it was the only thing we had saved. And so I learned the backup. So honestly, I'm going to say that because I had to listen to it for 9 days. But other than that, I'm probably Stevie Nicks.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't have to listen to Pump It by Black Eyed Peas, maybe Stevie Nicks. Yeah.
And when you arrive at your destination, what's your tipple of choice?
You know what? Bruny Island cider.
Nice.
Awesome. Can't get it in Queensland though. Mm. I've tried to get it shipped so many times, but best cider I've ever tasted in my entire life.
And I believe you don't mind our sparkling wine either.
I love the sparkling wine. Oh, God, I love everything.
And the last question, the big debate, curried Tasmanian scallops, a culinary delight or a culinary crime?
I'm going to go with a crime. And I can't give you a reason why. I can't give you a good reason why, but it's a crime.
Okay, one day soon we actually need an update on the statistics for this because
I don't
this
know if
is
I've tried it.
Favorite question, and I think we need an update on where we're sitting. But thank you. And thank you for listening to today's episode of Talking Tourism. Remember to subscribe to hear more episodes as we release them every 2 weeks or so. Also remember to tell a friend or tourism colleague to check out our podcasts. Talking Tourism is an initiative of Tourism Industry Council Tasmania, and today's episode was brought to you with the support of our partner, Tasmanian Parks and Wildlife Service. A big thanks also to Caleb Miller at Mac40, our audio specialist who produces these episodes. I'm your host, Tracy Mallett, and we'll catch up next time.